You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, Episode 10, Fantasy Strategy, to Tank or Not to Tank. Diving deeper into this year's draft, prospects with fantasy upside, and some sleepers. Let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to Episode 10 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and feel free to subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at DPR_show or email us at prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. I am with my co-host Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, let's get right into it. To tank or not to tank, where do you lie on this?
It depends on your league, I think, and the team. A lot of teams that decide to tank usually inherit teams that have been abandoned. And if that's what I did in one of the leagues that I'm in, and I inherited a team that was just rubbish, and I completely purged it. We're talking scorched earth. I had, I think, a full NHL roster with a prospect roster, and combined I had about maybe one or two guys that were actually in the NHL. And with plus minus, I think I finished the year like with a minus points total.
Wow.
Dead last. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of reasons why you would want to tank. Having a rotten team to begin with is number one on my list. And you can really speed up your rebuild if you do a tank. And let's be honest. I mean, it's not like we've got fans buying tickets to come watch our fantasy teams that are going to protest and refuse to buy season tickets if we trade away all our good players for prospects. And tanking, if your team is garbage and it's not going to win, tanking makes it fun. It gives you something to look forward to the future, and it gives you something to do in the interim. You can make a whole bunch of trades. You trade away, you know, your aging veteran players. Like, say you've got Henrik Lundqvist as your best player. You can trade him for a prospect like Mikko Rantanen and maybe a first-round pick to someone who's a contender but is just maybe missing a goalie or has a season. Maybe he has Jonathan Quick and he's in trouble, so you make that trade for him, and now you've got something to do. You can participate in the league via trades. Trading is fun. And and anyone who's listening to this podcast probably feels the same way I do about doing draft research. That's why you're listening to us right now. You're doing your draft research. It's fun. And if you acquire a whole bunch of draft picks going into your fantasy draft, you're rubbing your hands like it's Christmas Day. You've got so many players that you want to get, and you got enough picks, you can get them all. And then, of course, in 2 or 3 years, when they all pan out because you did your research listening to this podcast, it's very gratifying to be able to say, yeah, man, I'm the prospect guru. I nailed it. My team, I built it up. I should be an NHL GM, basically. So those are a couple of reasons off the top of my head why I think tanking is okay.
But
I'm guessing you don't like it.
But where's the morality? Where are your morals? Like, you're playing to compete. You should compete every single year. You should try to be building a team. And what if you're playing head-to-head? You're just an easy 10-0 win or 12-0 win, however many stats you play, for maybe a middling team that plays you twice in a year because your schedule is favored towards playing the guys that are tanking, and they end up being a better team when they're not really a better team, and the guys at the top are upset about this because they only get to play you once a year and they know that you're tanking. I just don't see, I see it on one end, but I also see it as somebody who's led leagues and has won leagues and saw teams do way better than what they should have done because they were playing the tanking teams. That's why I'm on the other side of tanking. I just don't like to see tanking. I like to see competitive teams every single year.
Yeah, okay. I have two thoughts on what you just said. One, by tanking, I'm trying to win, right? And by tanking, I'm not trying to win. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. I am competing. I'm just using a different path to get to a championship than what you are.
But
and as far as your head... Okay, go.
But in how many years?
Well, if I'm any good at it, it would be, 2, maybe 3.
And there's the key thing. You have to be good at tanking. It's almost as hard to tank as it and turn your team around to win as it is just building a roster to win the year you're supposed to win.
Sure. I mean, look at the NHL. Los Angeles and Chicago have won a lot of Stanley Cups recently, and I would argue that they did that by virtue of draft. They drafted very well. They got a little lucky. They made some really nice trades, but that's how they got there. And then you can look at other teams like Edmonton. They've had a whole bunch of first overall picks in the last decade, and they still stink.
Yeah.
So they're not doing it right. And I think maybe a lot of that has to do with two things, good drafting and timing.
Yeah, timing is definitely important when you're trying to tank.
I want to come back to that, but first I want to just touch on one last point that you made, the head-to-head leagues. I think I don't have any sort of moral conflict with tanking as long as you're doing it within the confines of the rules of your league. If you've got an active roster that's full of prospects and you're tanking and you're in a head-to-head league, then you need to talk to your commissioner and say, we need to change our rules because this isn't right. It's an unfair advantage to whoever's playing this tanking team. That's why you can't do that in the DPFHL, the Dollar Prospects League, because it's a head-to-head league and it's got a full roster. We have about, what do we got, about 26 teams, 24 teams with full prospect bench.
Yeah.
Right, so it's super deep. And you can't really tank in that league. I mean, you can load up on prospects, but you still have to have active NHL rosters and you still have to have a team that's above the salary cap floor. So there are anti-tanking measures in place to help mitigate the head-to-head argument.
Yeah, so what if you aren't able to tank? What are you supposed to do then? Just
you can still rebuild through the draft. I mean, someone's got to get the first overall pick, and you can, you know, get a low pick if you can't ensure that you get the first overall pick. Just because you have to have a salary cap floor doesn't mean you have to have good salary cap value players. You can, lots of people will be looking to trade players with bad contracts away. And if you plan on being a bottom feeder team, maybe there's some players you can acquire, like guys that are on our free agent list, like Yuri Hudler, not worth the money that they make because they don't produce enough fantasy points, but they have a ridiculously high $5 or $6 million contract. You can, you know, fill up your roster and fill up your salary cap that way and finish a little low. Your pool colleagues might not be happy with you if it's a head-to-head league, and I think that's something that you really want to gauge. And another thing I would ask about if you're tanking in fantasy hockey, why are you in your hockey pool? Is it for the money? Is it to win? Or is it to have fun making trades and having drafts? And if it's to make money, then I would suggest that you try daily fantasy. It's quicker. You get much more return on your investment right away. You can make money on it. If you're in it just to have fun and play NHL GM, then yeah, go for it. Tank. But back to the timing. If you're going to tank, you got to time it right.
Yeah. So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. Well, I think we kind of hit on a little bit when we talked about Edmonton. I guess you could say they've been tanking, and they had a lot of first overall picks, and they drafted some really nice players with those first overall picks. Taylor Hall was very nice. Nugent Hopkins is very nice. Neil Yakupov is, you know, he's maybe okay, but there's no superstar in there. There's no player that you're going to draft, and then the next season you get instant gratification on your roster following the draft, like we've seen in the last 2 years. The last 2 years have been really good timing to tank. If you finished last overall in your draft and your draft mimics what the NHL's was, where you get either first or second if you finish last, that means you've added either McDavid, Eichel, Matthews, or Laine to your roster in the last 2 years. There is no wrong choice in any of those picks, and they all have made it to the NHL and contribute right away. You go back a couple years and that's not necessarily the case. What was the draft with Ekblad and Bennett? That was
2014 was Ekblad 14. And Reinhart 1-2. You go the year before, 2013, McKinnon and Barkov. they weren't jumping out at you in their first couple of years. Now that they're four seasons in, yeah, they're top talent, MacKinnon and Barkov, but Barkov definitely wasn't the elite centerman that he's becoming now when he was starting in the league. So it definitely depends what draft year you're tanking in.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if people think that if they get the first overall pick, then they're getting a Wayne Gretzky caliber player. And the fact that there seems to be some unwritten rule that if you're drafted first overall, you must play in the NHL the following season. It's just not the case that they're always going to be great. And they might be great, but it might take them 3 or 4 or even 5 years. And, you know, in terms of reality, that's fine. That NHL teams are happy with that so long as they reach that plateau. But, you know, you want more instant gratification for your fantasy roster. You don't want to have players on your prospect bench for 5 years and you're burning a spot holding on to this guy and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. See Mark Jankowski.
So let's circle this back around to the fantasy draft coming up this year for everybody, the 2017 draft. Is this a year where you talked about timing? Is this the right timing to be tanking for the first or second overall pick?
I don't think so. I think you'll get a nice player. You'll get either Nolan Patrick or Nico Hischier first or second overall in your draft likely. And they will be good players and they'll likely contribute to your fantasy roster in the future, maybe even next year, who knows, but not to the caliber of Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid. So if you've got a roster that you're looking at and you think, I'm not going to make my fantasy playoffs, I'm not competitive, I need to do some retooling, I need to blow it up, I need to purge off whatever assets I have and go young and go draft and rebuild. This is tough because this draft isn't going to help you as much next year. So maybe what you might want to do is hold on to your assets, maybe trade them for more established prospects, guys like Mikko Rantanen that are, you know, on the cusp, that are maybe in the NHL. If you have someone who's competing and has a Mikko Rantanen and he's just not producing enough fantasy points already, or I don't know, maybe Anthony Mantha, Andreas Athanasiou, those kind of guys, they're in the NHL, they're producing, but not incredible amounts. If you can maybe pick up a guy like that, that'll produce for you sooner than Nolan Patrick will, I would do that. Or maybe even trade them for 2018, early draft pick if you are confident it's going to be a top five pick, because there's some really nice players coming up in 2018.
Yeah. What about quantity? Would you want to try to get more first round picks this coming draft because there might be hit or misses, and the hits might be big hits and the misses might be, there might be a couple misses, but with quantity, you have a better chance of getting those hits. Would you want more first round draft picks in this coming year then?
Me personally, yeah, because I love fantasy hockey drafts, and I love having as many picks as I can. If you ask anyone who's in a fantasy league with me, good luck getting me to trade away a first round pick. You're going to have to pretty much grossly overpay to get a first round pick out of me. I do so much research on prospects, and then when it comes to draft time, I'm like a kid in a candy store. In this particular draft, for the average fantasy guy, There are some interesting players for sure. And the way the NHL is going these days too, with smaller, more highly skilled players, there's no more goons in the NHL. I mean, there isn't one guy in the NHL whose role is to fight and physically intimidate players. There's guys who can do it, but they can also skate and they can also do other things. So you're seeing a lot more opportunity for the smaller, highly skilled guys in the NHL. And there's a couple of guys like that in this year's draft that should go in the first round that are ranked pretty high in the Dobber Prospects Fantasy Ranking article that came out today. We'll talk about those guys in the second segment, but you could load up on a couple of those guys. And the more darts you get to throw at the board, the more likely you are to win a prize.
Yeah, so you're a commissioner for a league. You see this tanking. What are some ways of getting around the tanking? Do you run a lottery draft? Do you like how do you get around this tanking, Peter?
Well, like we do in the Dauber Prospects League, you try and make it as close to the NHL as possible. Those are the kind of leagues that I like to be in because, you know, I think a lot of people who do full keeper fantasy teams, they like to emulate being an NHL general manager, right? So you have a salary cap with a ceiling and a floor, and that has a profound impact on player values. You maybe want to put a limit on how far in advance you can trade draft picks. Maybe like two or three seasons at the most is as far in advance for draft picks that you can trade. And like I said before, you have to have a roster full of active NHL players. And you can't circumvent the cap with having Pavel Datsyuk and Chris Pronger on your active roster. Things like that.
Yeah. We do in one of my leagues, we have an 18-team, 50 players per league, full farm system. After the playoffs start, everybody from that doesn't make your fantasy playoffs gets a team in the playoffs of the NHL. And it goes from the worst odds to the highest odds. So your winner in your league or the person that finishes just outside of your league playoffs gets the best odds team. So last year, if you just lost out of the playoffs, you would get Pittsburgh Penguins. If the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup, then you get the first overall pick. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's lots of incentives you can do. And instead of paying out just the top three people in your league, maybe have the payouts go much further. Say you're in a 12-team league, for example. Have the payouts go 1 through 6. So there's more incentive to fight to be a middle of the pack team.
Yeah.
And try and stay in it. Just, you know, so maybe I'm talking a huge prize money here, but maybe next year's entry fee is paid. Then you're playing with house money. There's nothing better than that.
Very true.
Or maybe a reverse draft priority. If you don't want to follow the NHL draft lottery system, maybe you've got maybe an 8-team league and the top four make the playoffs. Then the guy that finishes just outside of the playoffs gets the first pick. And the guy that finishes last gets fourth overall pick.
Yeah, that would definitely harm the basement teams, I think.
It would make it hard to get out of the basement, but I mean, if it's a shallow league, your worst player is still pretty good, right? True, like, if it's a shallow league like that, it's not too bad. So those are a couple of things that I've seen and been in some leagues and experimented with. Or if you want to get rid of tanking, just get rid of keeper leagues and just do a full redraft every year, and then there is no advantage to tanking.
Very true. Peter, we want to know what all the listeners think. Please let us know, DPR_show, to tank or not to tank, which side of the ball you are on. You also wrote an article today, Peter. You mentioned it earlier, the 2017 fantasy rankings, draft eligible prospects. When we come back, we're going to dive deep into this list, along with some sleepers who you should be targeting in your upcoming prospect drafts. That's after the break. All right, Peter, you wrote a dandy of an article today, Tuesday, bringing together a dozen scouts, analysts, writers, just a full bag of hockey prospect nuts to come up with a fantasy ranking for the 2017 NHL draft eligible prospects. Let's dive deeper into this list. Where do you want to begin? It's such a great list.
Yes, it is. And I want to begin by saying I didn't actually really write it. I just kind of put it all together. I got some extremely excellent contributions from a bunch of our own staff and some external sources as well. So I just kind of want to take a short second to give a shout out to some of the guys that contributed.
Yeah, for sure.
So a couple of former guests of the Dauber Prospects radio show, actually, Scott Wheeler from Future Considerations and Ryan Wagman from McKean's. Our own Zach Devine, he writes for us doing the Sharks and the Hockey Writers. They're all contributors as well. Brock Otten, who does the OHL Prospects blog. Great, great blog if you like OHL Prospects. Mark Seidel from North American Central Scouting. Anthony Morano, Draft Buzz Hockey. Steve Cornianos from Draft Analysis, who you'll hear in our third segment. And some more Dauber Prospects guys from our own team, Cam Robinson, Joel Henderson, Brad Phillips, and associate editor Kevin LeBlanc. Thank you very much to those guys. They put a lot of work into their lists, and it made the article great. I just composed it and put it together.
Excellent. So we're gonna get right into it. Nolan Patrick, number one. That's kind of a given. Who's number two on this list, Peter?
Yeah, Nolan Patrick was a consensus first overall, but there was a slight bit of discrepancy. Almost everybody had Hishire at second, except for Steve, I think, who will be joining us in our guest segment. So it's pretty much clear cut: Nolan Patrick first and Nico Hishire second. I used a scoring system based on where they were ranked on everybody's list, and I added it all up, and there was 13 of us, and Nolan Patrick's score was 13, so he was unanimously first overall, and Hishire was ranked 24. Toldenen was third on the list, and his score was 54. Fourth, we had Mittelstadt at 60, and Tippett right behind him at 61, and coming in at sixth was Gabriel Velarde, and he had 70 points. And there's a separation after the top six. There's a bit of a tier break there.
And is that because the next starting tier is a defenseman?
Probably, yeah. Timothy Liljegren, who has widely been ranked second overall the whole season on a lot of the draft ranking lists, he scored 93, so there's a 20-point drop from the guy in front of him. And then there's an even bigger drop, 40-point drop to eighth on the list, Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I have a feeling that has a lot to do with the defensemen. The forwards always get looked upon much higher in fantasy rankings, so to see Liljegren still up in seventh is no downgrade from if you see him at second or third on most people's NHL draft list. Having him in seventh in a fantasy list is still a pretty good defenseman you're getting.
Yeah, I mean, you might get more points from picking a forward, but you get more value picking Liljegren there because, you know, how many defensemen are you going to get? They're going to score as many points as him, and his NHL certainty is pretty high. And then, you know, you start going down the list a little bit more, you get guys at like Yamamoto and Elias Anderson and Klim Kostin. Like, their NHL certainty not as sure as Liljegren's is at this stage in their careers, so it's a better value pick.
All right, so let's go with a couple of guys that are moved up this list from like the beginning of the year. Nico Hischier, his stock's got to be going up after the World Juniors.
Yeah, it's going up through the roof on every possible format of draft ranking, fantasy or otherwise you can come up with. His coming out party at the World Juniors really cemented him as a legitimate candidate for, I think, first overall in the draft. There's still lots of hockey to go, and he's trending hard in the up direction, whereas Nolan Patrick has just been kind of like plateau because he hasn't been playing. You know, he's just come back recently, and he's been on fire, and I saw a goal of his on a GIF on Twitter the other day. It was pretty sweet. He's got great hands.
His first game back from his injury, 2 goals, 2 assists, it was unreal. What a comeback. I'm really excited that Nolan Patrick is going to play the rest of the year, and hopefully he stays healthy just to actually put a good 1-2 fight in this 1-2 overall.
It's his spot to lose. It really is. And his body of work up until this point has kept him in first. And I don't think he forgot to play hockey over the couple of months that he's missed. So it'd be nearly impossible for Hishire to derail him at this point. But I'm not saying it's impossible.
And who knows if an NHL team makes everybody's jaw drop like last year, Pierre-Luc Dubois going before Puljujärvi. So it really does depend on where these guys get drafted to where you are going to end up putting these guys in your fantasy list. That's how close this list is, I believe, in like the top 4 or 5 guys.
It only takes one NHL team to rank one player higher than the rest of the world to have everyone just throw up their mock draft list and throw it out the window on draft day.
Exactly. Martin Nikáš, a Czech-born player playing in the Czech league. What can you tell us about this guy?
Well, we talked a little bit about him on the last episode, and then we talked about him again on the last episode with our guest, Scott Wheeler. So we covered it pretty well there, but he also had a bit of a coming out at the World Juniors. He's got offensive skills, and I think he showed some leadership playing on the Czechs team and carrying the play for them at times. I really like how confident he was with the puck, and I watched him live a couple of times, and he's not afraid to attack defending players when he has the puck, and try and go around them or through them, maybe however he can. He's not intimidated to try high risk, high skill plays. As a draft eligible at the World Juniors, I thought that was the most impressive thing about his game, is the confidence that he displayed.
Interesting. Another guy that has kind of jumped up the board, Kaylor Yamamoto from the Spokane Chiefs in the Western Hockey League. He's ranked 11th on this list. Is he going to be winger eligible? Most likely, yeah.
Yeah. He's probably too small to play center in the NHL. He plays both positions in the WHL right now. I think we've got him ranked a lot higher than what he probably actually will get drafted, because, well, he's just a really small player. He's 5'8", about 159-60 pounds. He's still only 18, so he's got room to grow. He's grown an inch since the end of last season already. A scouting report I looked at him from the end of last year had him at 5'7", so he's now 5'8". So maybe by the time of the draft, he'll be 5'9". It's not unheard of for 18-year-olds to grow. Or, you know, who knows, maybe that's just smoke and mirrors. The tail of the tape there, it might not actually be changing. They're just saying that to help him with his draft. Who knows?
Yeah, the agents are throwing a bone to a couple of the scouting guys that are supposedly measuring these guys. Is he like a Alex DeBrincat? I know DeBrincat went in the second round, but they're both small guys, and DeBrincat going to Chicago really, really helped his fantasy stock out, that the fact that he could land in Chicago. What if Kaylor Yamamoto goes in like the 20, 21, 22 spot to a playoff team? Would that help him?
It could, yeah. I think what really matters to him is that he gets a team that knows how to develop players and can be patient with him. He should play in junior again next year, and probably the year after that, unless he has the same kind of season that Mitch Marner had last year with London, where he's just like clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the league, and he's so skilled that could very well be the case, that he goes back and plays next year, and then after that, he's just too good. Can't play in junior anymore because he's too good. Yeah, he's small, but it'd be a waste of a year letting him go to junior again. He's that talented. He's got great speed. He's got great vision. He's got a good shot. He's a highly, highly, highly skilled player. He's just small. And like I said earlier in the show, that's not a deal breaker anymore. And it's another interesting quirk to this draft. There is a lot of highly skilled small players, and there's a lot of really big guys that have skill too. So I think this draft will be really telling to see where the thermometer in the NHL is on how does size matter.
Yeah, because teams might have to decide between a Matt Strome at 6'3.5" to Nick Suzuki, who's like 5'10¾" is what he's measured at. So, well, do you go with that? That's almost six inch difference.
Yeah, there's big, highly talented players like Owen Tippett, Costin, Glass, Hegg, Radcliffe, and then you've got a lot of small skilled players like Suzuki, Tolvanen, Nekash, and Yamamoto. So that's a little sub storyline that I'll be paying close attention to at the draft this summer.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Nick Suzuki playing for Owen Sound? So Owen Sound Attack are a decent team in the OHL in the Western Conference, a very strong Western Conference in the OHL. Nick Suzuki, what do you think of his game?
He's another highly skilled player. He plays with another player we spoke a little bit about, Pontus Almu. He's a small, prolific scoring player as well, but I think Nick Suzuki could be this year's Adam Mascarin or Taylor Radish. He's short, not small. He's not afraid to play a more physical game. He'll go into the gritty areas. He'll compete physically, and he doesn't strike me as a weak player. He's got hockey strength, and he's not that small. He's like just under 6 feet. He's 5'11", 183. And again, 18 years old, that could change like significantly in 2 years when he's ready for or 3 years when he's ready for the NHL. So he's a player that right now fits that small but skilled category, but I think that's a little misleading. I think he's a much more reliable bet than some of the, than a guy like Yamamoto.
Interesting. All right, a couple of draft stock downward. They're going downward. Klim Kostin, Central Scouting has him as the number one European skater. Is it because he plays in the KHL and they're worried that he's going to stay in the KHL? Is that Russian vibe that everybody gets with the draft prospects, is that why Klim Kostin's going down?
Could be. I think the Russian factor is at play with Kostin, and his stock has fallen. He was the first pick in the CHL import draft last summer to the Kootenay Ice, and he refused to report. You got to think that if you own the first overall pick in the import draft, you're going to do a little research, right? You're going to talk to some agents, maybe even talk to some players, go to the NHL draft, get your finger on the pulse of who wants to come to North America and not waste that pick by picking a guy that's not going to report, right? So I have to believe that the team did their due diligence and was led to believe that Kostin was coming to North America, and now he doesn't. So that's a red Russian factor flag for me. He played in the Canada Russia Super Series across Canada for Russia, and we talked about him with Ainsley when he was on our show. He was pretty invisible that tournament, and so that's Kostin in a nutshell. He can be invisible for large stretches, and then I think it was the U18 tournament maybe, and he was just dynamite. He was dominant. So his consistency and his compete level are red flags. The fact that he wouldn't come to North America is another red flag for me. I just have an aversion to some Russian players because of this. And I would pass on picking Klim Kostin in pretty much every draft, fantasy draft format.
Interesting. Another guy that I want to get your input on, Maxime Comtois from Victoriaville Tigres in the QMJHL. There's a lot of French in that sentence, Peter. Wow.
Wait.
Yeah, Comtois. What can you tell us about his game?
Sure. I think he's a player that will be a really nice NHL player. I think he's got a lot of tools in the toolbox, and he puts them together pretty well. You know, he's got speed, he's got size, he's got pretty decent hands, he can play a 200-foot game, all those nice things, all those, you know, scouting cliches. But I'm just not, when I watch him play live, I'm just not seeing the fantasy value in him. I don't believe that he's going to be a prolific offensive contributor to your fantasy team. So I think he's a player that is rated appropriately in the NHL. So like Sportsnet and TSN drafts, they rank them on NHL value. And I think he's appropriately rated on those charts. Although he is dropping, but I think that's too high. If you're doing a fantasy draft, whatever you do, don't just use Craig Button or Jeff Merrick's list for your draft. They know what they're doing and they make great lists, but they don't have fantasy hockey in mind. Go to Dobber Prospects, do the fantasy ranking, draft eligible prospects. It's not just my opinion. It's like a dozen prominent hockey watching, scouting, fantasy minded people's opinions. It's your best bet. And he's a prime example of, or last year, Logan Stanley. Logan Stanley was rated high on like all the draft lists. And I don't even think he made our fantasy ranking draft eligible prospects last year because he just didn't have any fantasy upside. So I'm not saying Comtois is as bad as Logan Stanley, but you'll be better fantasy value if you're in a league that rewards you know, hits and block shots and penalty minutes, because he'll get a few of those too, I think.
When you brought up Logan Stanley, I remember last year, I think it happens with defensemen, that defensemen get drafted higher up, so guys think that, okay, it's my 16th pick, this guy went 16th overall, I'm going to take the defenseman that was drafted at 16th overall, because that's what I'm supposed to do. I saw Logan Stanley go last year 20th overall, 18th overall in one of my leagues, and I was like, "What? Who's this Logan Stanley?" Because I remember looking at the fantasy rankings that we had on DauberProspects.com the year before. You did the exact same thing. You put it into a consensus, and I was like, "Who's this Logan Stanley?" Like, I didn't even know this Logan Stanley. I had to go into the actual draft, and I was like, "Oh, okay." Then I went and looked him up, and like looked into fantasy, went on Dauber Prospects to get his profile, and was like, "Okay, I'm glad I skipped on that guy. I'm definitely not upset that Logan Stanley got taken 20th or 19th overall or whatever." So I think it happens a lot with defensemen, because you think you're getting this top-rated defenseman, but in the NHL, they're not looking for all offensive defensemen, which is what you want in your fantasy league.
Yeah, and in fact, I think the NHL is trending more towards fantasy hockey in that respect, where if you look at a guy like Logan Stanley, and I'm not saying this is accurate, but let's just say he's a big hulking defenseman that can't skate to save his life, has no offensive upside, but he can fight and clear the front of the net and chop guys down like a lumberjack when they're standing in front of his goalie. That used to be a valuable asset in the NHL, you know? That was a great top pairing defenseman that you would play with your Chris Chelios or whatever. But that just doesn't fly anymore in the NHL. You have to be able to skate. You have to be able to create transition if you're a defenseman. If you can't do both of those things, you're not going to make it. And, you know, it remains to be seen if Logan Stanley can skate and create offense at an NHL level. He does it pretty well in the OHL right now. But I wouldn't risk a first round pick on him, that's for sure.
All right, let's talk about a defenseman. He's ranked the sixth defenseman on this list, 26th overall, Kalen Foot, son to Adam Foot. Is he going to be Adam Foot?
He's going to be similar.
Those are big shoes to fill, skates to fill.
Sure they are. Our comparable player for him on this list, we avoided Adam Foot. That's just too obvious. And maybe even a lot of people who are in fantasy pools now have no idea who Adam Foot was. So we listed his comparable as Brennan Carlo. But he does play a similar style to his dad. He plays a heavy game, and he's got some offensive upside. He's producing decent points in the WHL. That's junior, and a lot of defensemen who produce points at the junior level don't even come close to sniffing at the point totals they had in junior when they make it to the NHL. And again, he'll be a worthwhile player picking if you're in a league like the Dauber Prospect Fantasy League that rewards hits and block shots. Because he'll get you, I think, lots of those, lots of hits, lots of block shots. I don't know if anyone's going to get lots of penalty minutes anymore, but and he'll... He has some offensive upside to his game too. Maybe not run the power first unit power play, depending on what team drafts him in their depth chart and all. But he knows what to do on both sides of the puck.
Interesting. You talked about the comparables, and I wanted to bring this up, that it's the comparables on the list that you have created, and you can find the list at our show notes, dauberprospects.com/dpr10, or it's on dauberprospects.com under the feature stories. So the comparables are on their playing style and not their point totals, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. To say a player is comparable to, like, Isaiah Radcliffe, his comparable is Patrick Maroon. He might not be limited to Patrick Maroon's offensive point totals, but, you know, he's a big guy and he throws his weight around, and he's got surprisingly soft hands. So he could outscore Patrick Maroon's career totals. It's Excellent. more of a style comparison than anything else.
All right, Peter, one last thing. Is there any names you want to bring up that didn't make the top 31 list?
I wasn't prepared for that, but yeah. Okay. I'll even be a little bit selfish and talk about a player that I really like, Jason Robertson on the Kingston Frontenacs. I watch a lot of Frontenac games, being a Kingston native myself, and I think I really like Jason Robertson's game. He's a big player. He's got that just innate instinct to score. Doesn't need the puck for very long. He can get a nice quick release. He's got an accurate hard shot, good velocity on it. He can be deceptive with his shot. His playmaking skills are a little underrated. The knocks on his game is he looks like he's wearing ski boots, not skates. Sometimes his first step acceleration is wanting. But once he gets going, he moves just fine. And I'd like to see him be a lot more aggressive. He is so passive out there. I mean, the other players, you know, he takes a shot at the net and he falls it through to the goal, and the defensemen give him a face wash or a bit of a shove, and he doesn't acknowledge it. So that's good discipline and all, but you know, every once in a while, you make it hard for players to do that against you. You know, they give you a face wash, punch him in the face. And he probably won't give you a face. Maybe you'll get a penalty. Right. But chances of him giving you a face wash again the next time you play are a lot smaller. You know what I'm saying? So I'd like to see, and he's got the size to do that in the OHL and do it effectively. So that's something that I'd like to see from him. Another thing I'll mention is we had a couple of goalies rated on a couple of lists. And some of them were reasonably high, none above 20, but Jake Ottinger and Michael DiPietro were the two top ranked goalies. I should have mentioned to the scouts that contributed to this list that I wasn't going to put goalies on the list, and I maybe would have changed my mind if one of them was ranked so highly. But picking a goalie in the first round of a draft, I think, is risky business. You've got to get a hit on your first round, and goalies can take such a long time to make it to the NHL. I just don't think it's worth wasting a first round pick on them. I really recommend taking probably a forward, maybe a defenseman if it's later in the draft, and all the cream of the crop's gone. But yeah, goalies just basically on principle didn't make the list.
I was gonna say, where's the goalie left? That was my last input, was where's the goalie love? But as we all know, as fantasy hockey players, goalies are not draftable. They're way too far down the line. They have way too special of circumstances that even if they are an awesome goalie, remember Jack Campbell? He never got a time for playing time, and then when he did, he didn't show, and now he's stuck in the A, and now he's over in LA, and it's just a mess for Jack Campbell. But I like Michael DiPietro. I'm going to try and steal him in a late round because I think he's got potential to be a great goalie. And another DiPietro on your team. Remember Rick DiPietro way back in the day? I would love to have another DiPietro goalie on my team.
Yeah, there's a perfect example. He was picked first overall, and then the Islanders gave him that ridiculous contract. And how did that work out?
Exactly. All right, joining us after the break, Steve Cornianos, from thedraftanalyst.com. You're going to introduce him when we come back, Peter. He was one of those 12 guys to contribute to the fantasy rankings list. We will ask him his thoughts on this year's draft class right after this.
All right, welcome back to Dauber Prospect Radio. We are talking fantasy ranking the 2017 NHL Draft. And now we're going to be joined by one of the most prominent independent scouts you'll find on Twitter, Steve Cornianos from The Draft Analyst. Steve, thanks so much for, first of all, contributing to the article. It's a lot of work. And thank you so much for joining us on the show. Welcome.
Oh, no, thank you. It's been an honor, and definitely look forward to doing it every year.
Yeah, it's a popular article. It gets a lot of views, so I think it's going to – people keep reading it. We'll keep writing it. So let's cut into the list. Paul's going to hit you up about a couple of guys who you ranked Higher than the average contributor on this list. So I'll turn it over to Paul. Hit it, Paul.
Yeah, we're going to start with Henry Yokiharu. You have him in your rankings, but he's not in our top 31 consensus rankings. Can you tell us a little bit of Yokiharu?
Yeah, he's a right-handed Finnish defenseman. He's kind of undersized, not too undersized. I think he's about 5'11", pushing 6 feet tall. Not very big as far as like strength goes, but he's very quick. He's a classic puck-moving defenseman and power play quarterback. He's been playing on the Finnish national team for a couple of years now. He played at all the U18 tournaments last year. He was at the, especially with the U18 World Championships where Finland won gold. He was also at the summer development camp for the World Juniors and then went to Portland where he plays in the WHL. And he was also a pretty high import draft pick. And then he was supposed to go to Finland, for the World Juniors. And Caleb Jones ended up going instead, and they both play in Portland together. So what happened when Jones went to the World Juniors and Yokiharu stayed back, he played really well. He logged a lot of ice time, but his primary strengths are basically running a power play, quarterbacking a power play, offensive puck mover, make smart passes, decent one-on-one play. Sometimes he can get manhandled a little bit, so he's got to rely on his footwork and his stick, and it usually helps him out. His positioning is pretty good too. You could kind of lump him in with a lot of the European defensemen from this draft class where they're not very big, but they could skate and they could move the puck. And there's just that high upside where you could see him being a top four one day.
Okay. Another defenseman that you have on your rankings that didn't make the list, Ian Mitchell from Spruce Grove AJHL. What can you tell us about Ian Mitchell?
Well, Mitchell is another right defenseman. He's a similar player to Yokiharu. He made Team Canada for the Hlinka tournament. That was the first time I really got a chance to see him on a pressure situation. And as the tournament progressed, he ended up kind of taking over the notable names there. And he was running the power play. And, you know, it wasn't the best result for Canada at the Hlinka, but he was one of the players that stood out. So I kept my eye on him. He's got a commitment to the University of Denver. And he plays well. He's, like I said, he's a very smart guy, a puck mover, very smart with his shots. He knows when to release it. You know, you see a lot of defensemen nowadays, and they just take forever to release their shot because they're scared of, clog lanes and what have you. And all that really does when you wait, I think, is it just makes it more clogged. Or just, you know, the forwards will follow the shooter. So he's got a good shot, pretty hard shot, accurate, quick release. Very strong positionally, one-on-one. And then with the recent World Junior A Challenge, he played for Canada West with Cale Makar, and he did well. I mean, they were paired together, and they're both righties. Don't know for how most of the tournament. I think there were just several games that I saw where they were paired together, and he kind of let Makar do his thing, so it shows you that he's kind of versatile. Like, he could play that top minute munching kind of go-to guy where it's his job to take the puck and move it 200 feet, or he could kind of acquiesce to his partner and say, you know what, I'm going to stay back. And that's when you're able to see how he plays odd man rushes, how he maintains a tight gap. So really good prospect. Doesn't really get a whole lot of notoriety. I know tomorrow they're playing the CJHL All-Star game and he'll be there. And, you know, he's also a candidate to play for Canada at the U18s coming up in April. So he's a kid I ranked really high in the beginning of the year, and he got to drop him down a little bit because of other players, but very, very promising defenseman.
Well, that's awesome, because a lot of our listeners probably don't get a chance to watch any AJHL game. So that's awesome that you brought him to attention. One guy that has Peter and I shaking our heads and kind of wondering, everybody else had Patrick Hischier 1-2. You had Mittelstadt second, Casey Mittelstadt out of Eden Prairie High. Why do you have Mittelstadt on your second spot?
Well, the first time I saw Mittelstadt play was at the Hlinka in 2015. So he was basically a draft minus two. And he was Team USA's best player. And this team had Kaylor Yamamoto. It had Riley Tufte. He was clearly their best player. He was the most electric. He was the smartest. He made the best plays. He was the toughest player that the opposing defenses could handle. So I got my eye on this kid. I'm like, all right, you know, let me go see him play. And of course, he was in Minnesota high school all of last year. And he actually left. His high school season finished disappointing for him. They didn't win the state championship, which we all know in Minnesota is a huge deal. And then he went to the U18s and he played on a line with Logan Brown, you know, ended up going first to Ottawa and with Kayla Yamamoto, who's another, you know, draft eligible for this year. And they basically torched everybody. And they were a big reason why USA was able to get almost as far as the gold medal game. So, you know, he's a big game player and he has that reputation. But then you start with his draft year where he played at the USHL, or correction, the All-American Top Prospects game. He was the MVP at that game. And then he went to the USHL, and a lot of people were wondering, well, here's a kid who's supposed to be in the USHL. He's got a college commitment to Minnesota. And he basically admitted to everybody that he's leaving the USHL the minute the high school season starts because his dream is to win a high school state championship. So people were kind of looking for him to struggle, because a lot of these kids, what they do is they go to the USHL, they struggle, and then they go back to Minnesota because, you know, they miss mom's cooking and they, you know, miss playing in high school. Well, Mittelstadt was destroying the USHL. He was their leading scorer by the time he left to go back to high school. So he's really an impressive five-tool offensive player. He does everything. He's got size. He could skate. He could shoot. He could play wing. He could set up plays. But he's got a great attitude, and he's a money player. And a perfect example was, you know, he goes back. So he's playing for Eden Prairie High School. They didn't really get off to a great starter. They did, but he wasn't really dominating the way people thought he would. And then Eden Prairie had two huge games this weekend. It's like Minnesota Hockey Weekend, whatever they call it. And they played the top-ranked Stillwater team and the second-ranked Edina team. So basically the two best high schools in the state of Minnesota. And in those two games, Eden Prairie won them both, and Mittelstadt had 5 points. He had two goals in the win over Stillwater, and he had 3 points in the win over Edina. So he's just a money player. This kid shows up for the big games. He could deal with the spotlight on him. And, you know, I compare him to Rick Nash, maybe not as mean as Nash, but he plays that kind of heavy, quick skill game. And, you know, like I said, I ranked him, I think, number two or number three from the beginning, from September. And it's going to take a lot for me to change my mind.
Do you think – you said he could play wing. Do you think having wing eligibility will bring up his fantasy? Like, people might – take him over Hishire and maybe even Patrick because of that winger eligibility?
Absolutely. I mean, because he also could shoot the puck a ton. I mean, you know, he's the go-to guy and he's a center. So he likes to set up plays. It's just, he's that real, he's almost like a Malkin type. You know, the times when Malkin, you know, when you're a fantasy owner and you own Evgeny Malkin, and then you see that he's playing on a line with Sidney Crosby when one of them is struggling or whatever, you know, they're going to get their chances. So it could be a situation like that where same thing with the Rangers right now with Kevin Hayes or JT Miller, where they could definitely play either or, and he'll be just fine.
Awesome. Do you think that because he's gone from the USHL to a lesser league playing high school, that a lot of scouts really cringe when that happens, and it's harder for them to get a read on how well he's progressing because he's not being challenged? Do you put any stock into that?
Normally I would, but like I said, he was in the USHL as an 18-year-old kid. And USHL has kids as old as, you know, 21 years old, and he was dominating them. I mean, Riley Tufte had a completely different situation last year where, you know, he was supposed to go to the USHL. He did. He stunk, with all due respect to Riley Tufte. Went back to high school, dominated there, and then lo and behold, he was a high draft pick. He goes to his freshman year now in college, and he's really had a rough start. So it's kind of one of those things where you're like, well, here's this high-ranking prospect, and he's only done well in high school. Mittelstadt is the complete opposite. He's done well in international. He's done well in the best junior circuit that America has to offer, and he's done well in high school. So the only thing left really is next year's World Juniors or this year's U18s. That's really it. I mean, I really think that the book's already out on him. It's just a matter of, what team is going to be picking where and where they have him on their draft board. But to answer your question, I don't think, you know, it would hurt him normally, but I think that the fact that he led the USHL in scoring before he left won't hurt him at all.
Awesome. A couple of guys you left off your rankings, Cody Glass and Nick Suzuki, ranked 15 and 16 in our consensus rankings. Why so low on Cody Glass and Nick Suzuki?
Well, Glass is a complete player, and I like him a lot, and he was rising little by little as, you know, as the season progressed. My only issue with him is he's supposed to be this two-way player, you know, 200-foot player, and when I watched him, and this could just be the fact that this only happened when I watched him play, so I have to see more of him. But he gets out-muscled a lot down low, and he's got decent size. I think he's like 6'1", 180 or something like that. So you know he's going to fill out to probably go up to about maybe 200 by the time he reaches his reaches the NHL. So it just, I don't know. It just, sometimes you watch a game and a guy makes a couple of mistakes and you're like, I don't know. So that's one of the things. And not to say that the people ahead of him haven't made their own mistakes. It's just one of those things where I think he just needs to get stronger. He's smart, though. It's not a smarts issue with him. It's a size issue. So I just like to see him learn how to properly win his puck battles when he's not, when he doesn't have a physical advantage. But as far as Suzuki goes, I mean, he was in my first round in the beginning of the season when people had him way down. I love this kid's game. It was just a matter of where do I fit him. And I thought about between he and Yamamoto, they're similar players in terms of, well, I know Suzuki's a center and Yamamoto's a winger. And Suzuki, well, maybe not the similar. They just remind me of each other, maybe because the Asian last name. But I don't know. I think he's a complete player. And if he was only a little bit bigger, he'd probably go even higher in the rankings. He's fast. He could score goals. I think last year he led all draft eligibles in goal scoring or close to it in shots. And he's a good face-off guy. He could kill penalties. So I do like him a lot. And he's one of those guys where I really didn't want to put him below that 31st rank. But then I got to look at my notes and I got to look back at all the other players that I scouted and say, okay, listen, this guy, you know, impressed me more in these areas. And of course, there's always going to be an issue with size with Suzuki. Is like, how is that going to translate to the next level?
All right, Steve, another player I want to talk to you about that didn't make your list. And this is a guy who I saw either usually around the 15 to 20 range on the draft list for the guys that ranked him or not on the list at all. And he was on your not at all list. And that's defenseman Robin Salo. What's your opinion on Mr. Salo?
He was, I think, in my first round in my September rankings. He was around 28 or 29. And then it's just a case where he got leapfrogged by a couple other players, notably McCarr. Like, you know, so if I'm going to put defensemen and rank them, I think Foote, Hague, and McCarr, he was ranked ahead of all three of them. And based on how the season's progressed, now, to be fair to Salo, he plays in a men's league. And he plays bottom pairing minutes, so he doesn't really play a whole lot. And he's really not an offensive defenseman. When he's played for Finland in international events, he's been a rock for them. He's been an anchor, but not from an offensive standpoint. He's one of those guys where you just lean on to be in the defensive zone for the late game draws, to be in the top pairing for a penalty kill, and so on. So you don't really see him take control of a game like you see the players that play in junior, which isn't fair. But at the same time, there's this level of unknown with Salo. Like, what could he really do? And especially with the World Juniors this year, you would think that he would kind of step in and he would be that go-to guy, maybe 1A behind Yo Levy, and it just wasn't the case. So, you know, I like I said, I've been watching him play since last year, and I like him a lot. I just one of those situations where other defensemen have made the most out of their time. But that being said, he's got a very short path to the NHL. He's a big kid. He's mobile. He's got a hard shot. He can play the power play, maybe not as much to run it, but he can be a good point man. He's got a quick release, good vision, aggressive, jumps down into gaps, really good, makes good reads, knows when to tell, his pinches are timed well. So really, really sound defensive player. And there's a good chance he sneaks into the first round because he's that good of a player.
Sounds like a really good value pick for whoever picks him. The last player I wanted to ask you about real quick is probably a well-known name. Matt Strome comes from a prolific hockey family, the Stromes. Not on your list. Why is that?
Okay, well, a couple of things. First is, yeah, no, he's a winger. So people think of the Stromes, they think of centers, and he's a winger. He's not the best skater. So I'm just going to start with that. He's not a very good skater. He's not bad, but he's just not a very good. He's got like that kind of like lumbering type look.
That Strom heavy foot.
Yeah, the Strom heavy foot. I know. I hate to say it, but it's true. Now he's a winger. He's got a great shot, and it's deadly accurate. And he gets himself into position. So from a fantasy standpoint, you like the fact that he does get a lot of shots on net. I think he's averaging about maybe three and a half shots on goal per game. But they're usually pretty good, pretty quality chances. I guess the high danger or medium danger shots. He's also an excellent option for the power play because of his size. You know, he's 6'3", 203. So my issue really is number one, he's not very creative with the puck, but then again, that's not his role. He's a power forward. But if you look at some of the power forwards in the NHL nowadays, they have to be that dual threat. You know, you can't just be a guy like Julien Gauthier last year. People were like, well, look at his totals. He's only got, 15 assists. But if you watch the kid play, he's actually very creative with the puck, whereas Strom, I just don't see that as much. But then again, I don't know what his coach is telling them to do. If his coach is saying, hey, get into position with the hammer cocked and fire it, then that's what you got to do. But he's I'm not going to lie, he's dropped in my rankings little by little. Maybe it's a little bit of bias. I'm not going to lie. Maybe it's a little bit of bias considering that he's not a good skater. And, Giovanni Smith was a guy that last year people knocked his skating. And when I watched him play, I just didn't see it. I saw a guy that was actually pretty quick, maybe not first step explosive, but he actually had a pretty long stride and he was able to cover ground. I just don't see that with Strom. So,
I like Giovanni Smith. And as far as the skating goes, I mean, there's been plenty of players who in their draft year, the knock on them was their skating. And, through coaching and training, they were able to iron that wrinkle out of their game. And some players even make it a strength. It goes from being a weakness in their pre-draft to a strength by the time they make it to the NHL. It remains to be seen with Strom. He's definitely got some other aspects to his game. Steve, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast again and contributing to the article. If our listeners are looking for another spot to find some excellent prospect information and scouting reports, I would direct them to your site, The Draft Analyst. And you're a prolific tweeter. You're on all the time, sharing all kinds of observations and scouting notes with the excessive amount of hockey you watch from all over the world. So tell everyone what your Twitter handle is and how they can follow you and find you.
Yeah, it's at The Draft Analyst, and the website is thedraftanalyst.com.
Good stuff. Thanks very much, buddy.
All right, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too, Steve. Holy smokes. Can you tell he watches a lot of hockey? So much insight into the 2017 draft class. Hope you guys had a pen and paper. There's a lot of names and a lot of notes. Thanks again, Steve Cornianos, for joining us. You can find all his scouting work at thedraftanalyst.com, and we will have all his info and links on our show notes at dauberprospects.com/DPR10. We want to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well and giving us a review. If you haven't done a review, please take a few seconds to rate and review us. You wouldn't believe how much of a few great reviews will do for our listenership. We want to do a mailbag segment in a couple of episodes. So, once again, I'm asking for a few more minutes to send out your fantasy questions, either by email, prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. That's prospectradio@dauberprospects.com. Or you can tweet us your questions. Our Twitter account is @DPR_show. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter. We post other podcasts that may be helpful, some ideas for better scouting, some other scouts we enjoy following, basically anything to do with scouting and prospects. You can also tweet our personal accounts, myself @Zwambag, Zwambag, and Peter @PHarling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.